Welcome to the Minute Maid Gang Podcast, episode 237. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Morning, Steve.
Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
And Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Good morning.
And our buddy Graham is off this week. He's probably surfing somewhere, like up on Lake Superior. I don't know where he is.
It's another wife selling stuff.
Is it?
You know, it's,
yes.
I did appreciate you guys making sure everybody knew I was out of town last week. Thank you very much for that.
Oh, that's right. We forgot about that. Yeah. Well, we figured everyone else was home. So hey,
whoever, you know, whenever Steve leaves town, we never say that he's out of town.
That's right.
But as soon as anybody else leaves, Steve tells the world, oh, the house is open.
Go ahead. I totally forgot. Sorry,
so
Phil. Anyway.
Was mom in good shape, Phil?
Mom's doing fine. Thank you very much for asking. Yeah, she's doing as well as can be expected. So.
And she's still enjoying Iowa?
She's still enjoying Iowa.
Seeing as how she's been there her whole life, probably.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. She knows it fairly well by now. So, all right, well, listen, the first thing we need to do is talk about all the big Apple stuff, guys. I know it's, you know, it violates your rule of, hey, let's talk about what's local first. But I think the biggest thing to all of us this week has been the Mavericks upgrade and the announcements from our friends at Apple. And it always precipitates us to invite Julio to join us because, you know, he hates Apple.
Oh, and, yeah.
Yeah.
So we always like to get his take on things. So
yeah, he only buys the Android Air.
That's
yeah,
right.
The Android Air. There you go. So here's, my only complaint is, other than I'm using a USB headset because I didn't check to see if the audio drivers for my mic interface worked on Mavericks, is the new pages and the new keynote blow. So that's all there is to it.
Really?
Yeah, oh, there's a lot of terrible buzz about it.
I think they're terrible.
No, I saw the stories, but I upgraded my laptop, and I think they're both fine.
Yeah, they're crap.
So why don't you like them?
There's not as many features on it. There's not as many. It's not as easy to, as far as I believe, as easy to use. It's so stripped down. It's just hard to use.
Yeah, but it's very elegant.
Yeah, right.
Well, it is, but here's the big thing, and somebody touched on this in an article. Julio, you've tried them, right?
Yeah, I'm a big Google Docs guy, so I'm never going to embrace them for production. But my big gripe was the increasingly archaic look and feel. I'm the guy who refuses to use a perfectly good Mac or iOS app if the icon blows. That's just the way I am. I'm just breathing huge sigh of relief. So the apps now they look, you know, up to date, and that's my big thing. But I've heard that there's a lot of automation features, a lot of scripting features that have been stripped out. Apparently, Apple has simplified the Mac iWork apps sort of conform with the minimalist iOS app, so that there's more compatibility between the two. And some advanced users are screaming bloody murder because a lot of the really geeky features that were in there are now gone. And I say, you know, I sympathize. I'm just the pioneer press guy who just needs to sit down and, you know, and pound out text. And I use Google Docs for that. And Pages look, you know, Pages compared to what I use on Google Docs, Pages look really, really, really cool, you know, lots of bells and whistles. So I personally have no complaints, but I understand that some people are seeing a lot of changes in the apps which are not to their liking, and I you know, more power to them.
Well,
just,
you know, the
you
big
know, just, I spent so much time, you know, just on whatever day it was that I loaded it was Thursday, I guess, and just spent more than my fair share of time trying to figure out how the hell just to put in a page break. It's painful.
Well, yeah, there definitely are changes, but the one thing that I saw on a, and I'll try to find the link so we can put it in the show notes, but it was about the big you know what? It came off of John Gruber's site, so I'll go there, you know, the Daring Fireball. But it was about the fact that Apple completely rewrote these from the ground up so they'd be binary file compatible between iOS and OS X. And so that you could, in fact, do what you was really hard before, which was I'd create a keynote presentation and think, hey, this would be great to display on my iPad sitting in front of a client. And so I'd create the whole thing and I'd transfer the keynote file over to iOS and I'd open it up and it would have all kinds of missing images and grouped things wouldn't be grouped anymore and, you know, yada, 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 because it wasn't binary file compatible. So there were issues there. And that was one of the things that they clearly had to fix. And now I'm sure they're going to start to add features back in.
Which is what they did with Final Cut Pro. I mean, they got rid of the old one. They brought the new one in, which is really stripped down. And then they sat down and started listening to their users. And, you know, okay, we'll put this back in. Okay, we'll put that back in. And I suspect that's probably what's going to happen here. Although, maybe not, because pro users are and consumers are two different situations. And on the consumer side, Apple often very aggressively, you know, goes minimal and simple and tries to keep it that way. But doesn't dare do that with its pro users because then they'll lose the pro users to, you know, to competing products.
Right, right. Well, it'll have to remain to be seen what goes on. But, you know, Julio, but mainly because you wrote a book about it too, but, you know, you've really, really, really looked at the iPad as a potential replacement for mm-hmm. a laptop and that now versus a traditional OS laptop versus a Chromebook. Uh-huh. And so you're looking at it from a different perspective. And are you seeing, well, let me, rather than lead you on, let me ask you the mm-hmm. question. Are you seeing more convergence in workflow stuff that's making all of this easier? Is it Chromebook is accelerating with respect to being able to do even image editing inside the browser. So your workflow is getting easier. Is the iPad getting easier with iOS?
I think I may have told you that I'm writing a book along these lines that's about to come out. And the whole thing with my book is writing, you know, if you want to write on a mobile device, how do you do it? What tools do you need? What apps, what hardware and so forth. And it's a slightly stressful time for me because I'm right at the final stages of writing my book and Apple is kind of rewriting, you know, whole portions of the book, which is stressful, but also kind of exciting because Apple is doing the very thing it did when it first released the iPad. You'll recall it released the iPad and then made sort of put a stake in the ground and said, you know, here are these apps that you can use to get things done on the iPad. And Apple right now is sort of very dramatically reprising that by making its iWork apps free,
yeah,
by upgrading them and so forth. And it's saying, you know, you want to get some real work done, forget that Microsoft Office crap. You can do it on our devices very well, very effectively, and at a very low cost. And so that is very, very interesting. It's validating the whole premise of my book, which is kind of fun. On the Chromebook side, things are getting very interesting as well, because I remember having conversations with the Chromebook people at Google, you know, years ago, and they were saying, yeah, things are a little slow right now. You know, the web app situation is a little clunky, but, you know, look into the future when you're going to be able to, you know, very powerfully, very effectively, you know, edit videos on the web, edit photos, you know, get stuff done on the web just using web apps, not native apps. Increasingly, these web apps are going to get closer and closer to the capabilities and effectiveness of native apps. And I distinctly recall, you know, having that phone conversation, and I'm sitting there and I'm rolling my eyes and I'm saying, oh, yeah, right. Yeah, dream on, guys. And it's happening. It's totally happening. Chromebooks are still a little underpowered, a little slow in terms of hardware, but the web tools they're tapping are becoming incredibly good. The photo editing capabilities in Google Plus on the web right now, the Flickr equivalents, all of this stuff. It's amazing. I'm almost to the point where I don't do any photo editing on the desktop anymore. I just do it on the web because those tools are so good and they're so convenient. They're available on any machine, and the latest batch of Chromebooks make things even sexier because the latest Chromebook models are really, really nice. The HP Chromebook 11, which looks like a little miniature iBook, you know, from the old iBook days. There's an Acer C720 model that has Haswell. They're not powerhouses. They're not MacBook Pro 13 Retina machines, but I've been taking these on, you know, reporting assignments to do writing on in the field, and they're really good. They're just fine, you know, for that sort of thing.
Well, what was interesting was Graham had sent me a link a while back to a VentureBeat article about an Irvine, California company that had built a pro video conferencing product on top of Google Hangouts. And I'll put a link in the show notes. The company's called Altadin, and their product is Business Hangouts. And when I started to look at that, I thought, you know, there's some pretty unique and interesting potential here for collaboration with a Chromebook, you know, because that was one of the things that I looked at. I said, well, you know, that's kind of a missing piece, even with Hangouts, you know, to really do true private collaboration with your business colleagues. And so there's a lot of things like this that are coming out because of WebRTC and other technologies that, you know, hopefully will make it a lot easier.
Why do we think that they changed the name of the full-size iPad to the iPad Air? That seemed odd to me. I thought at once they were going to really do something interesting with that iPad, but they just changed the name and the bezels.
They've done it before. I mean, there's precedent for this. There was I can't remember which came first, but there was the iPod Mini.
Right, yeah. That came first,
and then Apple, I believe, the Mac Mini came after the iPod Mini, and I remember asking Apple, you know, you got the Mini here, and then you used the Mini over there, and I asked them, you know, point blank, why did you do that? And they're always really cagey about, you know, their internal decision making, so they didn't really tell me very much. But there's precedent for achieving great success with the naming of a particular product and then taking that name and applying it to another product to have some of that star power sort of carry over. So I think it's a brilliant decision.
It just seemed like they were going to put like some kind of crazy keyboard dock to it that would make it sort of like into a MacBook Air sort of when you put it into the keyboard dock.
Yeah. You're overthinking that. I think it's just
maybe
naming.
They'll do that at some point, but yeah. It just seems like we're on a collision course, you know, Mac OS and iOS. And that point is, you know, what they're calling now the iPad Air is at that point where you could have some characteristics of both, similar to what Microsoft is doing with Surface.
Well, and you know what I'm concerned about is that collision, Tim, will be between a Mercedes S-Class and a Mac truck, and the result will be a Volkswagen Beetle. You know, that they'll dumb the thing down so much that...
No, I'm looking for a new laptop. My MacBook Pro is getting long in the tooth, and I was thinking, you know, I'll just get a new iPad and you know, use that. But the more and more I look at these Chromebooks, it's very tempting because they're half the price and they've got a full size keyboard and they're, you know, they're the form factor of a MacBook Air approximately. And for what I do on the road, you know, a Chrome OS would be okay.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you say that because I'm right in the middle of writing a post. I'm a journalist, and I've been sort of experimenting with highly mobile, not very costly writing rigs for the road. You know, lugging a Chrome Pixel, a big, huge, expensive Chromebook or a MacBook Pro. You know, these big, expensive, you know, very heavy, very big machines. They're just too much for me. When I'm on the road, I just need to write and access the web and do my email and so forth. And so I'm doing an experiment in which I compare the HP Chromebook 11, the Surface 2, you know, the RT-based new Surface tablet, and an iPad Mini with a keyboard. I'm sort of comparing and contrasting all of these and coming to the conclusion that they all have big advantages and they all have big disadvantages. I won't go into all of them, but you know, on the Surface side, one big advantage is the keyboard cover, which I think is fantastic. But the conclusion, the bottom line of the post very likely will be, okay, compare all the pros and cons and sort of make the call. I think it's totally Chromebook. Absolutely, totally Chromebook.
Really? Wow.
Yes, definitely.
So I'm thinking of getting that new Acer one. Is that, I have not seen one in the flesh. I've seen the Chrome, what is it? The HP Chromebook 11, the one that's the MacBook. And that's okay too. It's just, I don't know. I just have a thing about HP. So
yeah, I wouldn't worry about the HP brand name because it's similar to Google, you know, doing deals with Asus and so forth. They, regardless of the maker, they have to sort of meet certain stringent Google specs. So I wouldn't worry too much about the HP branding. But go to my Google Plus feed. I did a post in which I in detail compared the pros and cons between the new Acer and the HP Chromebook 11. I kind of went down feature by feature and sort of how do they compare and what's good on one side, what's good on the other side. And that, I think that'll be helpful for you. And I personally, at the end of the post, came to the conclusion that the HP is the better machine for me, but very clearly said that the Acer machine is not a bad machine. It's a perfectly fine machine for some people.
Yeah, I have seen their older version, the one last year's version, and that one's just unusable. The keyboard's so bad.
Yeah, that's a problem. I think you might have a problem with the keyboard on this Acer too.
Ah, okay.
The keyboard on the HP is fantastic, but the Acer is I think in my post I said the Acer is a Maserati to the HP Chromebook 11's Mazda.
Really?
It's a lot faster. It's just a lot more performance, and a lot more battery life too, because it's Haswell.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the Surface, which was the other thing that came out this week on the same day that all the Apple announcements. So I think they sort of lost the news cycle, as well as the new Nokia tablet that also runs the Windows operating system. So you say you have a Surface 2, and can you give us some kind of feelings about that versus the first generation Surface versus the iPad?
Yeah, I have the Surface 2 and the Surface Pro 2. I have both of them, and you know, one seemingly minor change, the two position stand on the back is huge, because the angle on the machine before was unusable for me. Now that I can flip it further back, it makes a huge difference. And I'm somewhat enthusiastic about the Surface concept in general, because the keyboard cover, again, is fantastic. The Surface is wider than an iPad. Even an iPad in landscape mode, the Surface is wider, which makes the keyboard wider, which makes the keyboard more usable. The all iPad add-on, not separate standalone keyboards, but the keyboards that are built into covers and cases, those keyboards are very scrunched by necessity, because they have to sort of conform to the iPad's dimensions. And as a result, in my opinion, they're very difficult to use. The Surface being wider allows for a wider keyboard, which makes it a lot easier to type, and the Surface Type keyboard, not the touch keyboard, which I don't like, but the type keyboard, is a masterpiece of hardware engineering. It looks like this flat, completely unusable thing, but it's the best keyboard for mobile device that I've ever seen. It's just, I can just fly on that thing. So the keyboard plus the two position stand, plus the very nice hardware, those are all ingredients for a very, very, very good productivity situation. The problem is it's very difficult to use the traditional desktop on either of these machines. It's just too claustrophobic. And obviously on the RT, there aren't very many apps for the traditional desktop. the start screen, you know, what Pogue refers to as Tile World, is great. I love it. I love the look and feel of it. It's much more appropriate for that kind of a hardware situation. The problem is there aren't enough apps to really make that feel like a going proposition. And there's a lot of bugginess, a lot of crashing, a lot of pausing. You know, there are performance issues. You know, one very fundamental thing is there's no touch version of Word. You have to go to the traditional desktop. Why Microsoft didn't do exactly what Apple just did and validate its entire hardware and software model with all of the necessary apps to sort of make that a going proposition is a mystery to me. Microsoft has had tons of time to do this and it hasn't done it. I just don't understand it.
Probably because they have to rewrite the thing from scratch.
Well, they've had OneNote out for 2 years now.
Yeah,
well,
true.
You know, where's Word? I just don't get it. So so just to make a long story short, I very much like using the new hardware in the start screen mode. You know, forget about the traditional desktop, just 100% start screen mode. I want to do that. I just want the performance to be a little more reliable, and I want enough apps to be available so that it doesn't feel limiting to me. So if Microsoft just sort of takes those extra steps, I think it might have a good situation here if it isn't too late, because yeah. It's great. You know, the hardware is designed. Microsoft's whole point that this is hardware for getting work done is absolutely on target. It just hasn't provided the necessary tools to make that happen.
You know, you mentioned David Pogue from the New York Times, and be interesting to get your thoughts on him leaving the New York Times to go to Yahoo to start some sort of, or to expand money. Their, well, of course, money. But to expand their consumer money. Technology website and
money.
Well, no, I think he sees the handwriting on the wall with print journalism, and he's just turned in what is probably the best technology writing gig in the newspaper business to go into, you know, the uncertainty of working at Yahoo, which who knows how
Yahoo, which is second only to print, and it's.
But you know, but here's the thing that really really gets to me, and now granted, CNET got purchased by CBS, but. CNET at one point was the place that I would tell people who were researching going for an HDTV, for example, you want to go to CNET and go through the reviews, because they would review everything on the market. You know,
when was the last time you did that?
Never, for the last 2.5 years, probably.
Yeah.
And so, I'm curious, Julio, do you think he is going to be able to somehow, make that an effective place, maybe a first stopping place that people will go if they want to do reviews, or are they going to put a social twist on it? What's your gut telling?
I don't know what Pogue's going to do, but Pogue has a lot of personality. And if he can create a web property that reflects that personality, it's going to be a very good thing, because he could do that at the New York Times up to a point. But you know, he's sort of working within the constraints of traditional newspaper journalism. So he can only do that up to a point. And he had been there for 13 years, so he was ready for something new. I totally understand that. He was there for a long time, wanted to try something new. This interesting new journalistic challenge is being dangled before his eyes. He's not hurting for money. This is not a big risk for him. And the man is rolling in money because he has all these other ventures on the side. He has nothing to lose. He's got this interesting challenge that is very low risk. If it doesn't work out, you know, he can leave the New York Times and not take the Yahoo gig and be just fine. Marissa Myers is just giving him a very interesting opportunity that Pogue, given his talents, given his personality, given his expertise, can turn into something very good. And there's a precedent for this. The Verge is a website that is owned by a company. You'll forgive me, but I can't remember their name.
Vox Media.
Yeah, Vox Media is the last entity you think would want to make, you know, the killer consumer gadget website. So the last entity on the world in the world I thought would ever want to do that.
Right, they're known for sports.
Yes, yeah. and they've turned around and made a Gadget website that blew Engadget and Gizmodo right out of the water. The Verge is not my go-to website for this kind of stuff. I like Engadget, I like Gizmodo. They suddenly started looking a little long on the tooth when the Verge is just a brilliant website. Pogue is the kind of guy, has the kind of talent, expertise, and personality to pull off a similar feat, to create a property owned by the last company you think would ever want to do this, and create something that is really going to be good. And there's still room for tech media properties that differentiate themselves from others, and Pogue is that perfect factor to make a website like that. I think this is going to be great.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, because The Verge is probably one of the most stunningly beautiful
yes.
sites that Vox has done, but they leverage their own in-house content management system. And the thing, I mean, it's wouldn't you agree? Because Tim, you're there all the time. I mean, I just think it's gorgeous.
Yes. It is. It's a little heavy, especially on a mobile device, but they've got good mobile apps. So if you're reading on a tablet or a phone, it's enhanced that from that perspective.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask Julio is that, you know, Walt Mossberg is leaving the Wall Street Journal at the end of the year to do All Things D full time. And the association with the Journal and All Things D is ending. So in a sense, he's doing the same thing that Pogue is doing, just in a more established property that they've built up inside of the Journal over the years.
Yeah, Ken Doctor, who used to be a Pioneer Press managing editor and is now a press industry consultant, and he blogs very heavily. He just did an extensive post on this particular trend of the Mossbergs and the Pogues sort of separating themselves from their traditional media roots and sort of moving on and doing things of their own. So that's a very interesting post. I'm sorry, I should have thought to put that on the show notes, but I can dig it up for you guys later. And so that makes for interesting reading, but that sort of begs the question, traditional media, you know, had these stars in their stables for a long time and are suddenly, you know, in within a short span of time starting to lose them. So that sort of, you know, sort of begs the question, you know, what's going to happen? Are new stars going to sort of take their place, or does this reflect, you know, the decay of the whole print media industry? And it's a good question. I'm part of that world, and I don't have an answer for you. I don't know.
So it's not a decline in technology journalism. It's a renewal, perhaps, that maybe just new people or people that we all know but from other places will pop up at the Journal and the New York Times, and we'll kind of move on as we
you're posing a question that I don't have an answer to. Some people will say, you know, tech journalism attached to print media has, some people will say that has been decaying for a long time and being overtaken, you know, by these tech websites. It's a solid argument. Other people will say, no, you know, Pogue and Mossberg are leaving, but other fine people will take their place, and these print outlets will continue to do very good tech journalism. I'm inclined to sort of believe, you know, the latter argument, but, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm sort of a mini, sort of a micro Pogue in my own world, and I'm very happy doing what I'm doing where I'm doing it. And, you know, without going into a lot of detail, because I don't think it would be appropriate, opportunities have been dangled before my eyes. I have been wooed and, you know, recruited and so forth to do other things elsewhere on a number of occasions over the years. And I've had moments of very intense soul searching and agonizing about what to do. And in each of those instances, I came to the conclusion, you might want to bleep the what I'm about to say, Steve. I'm having so much fucking fun at the Pioneer Press. I don't want to leave. I just love what I do.
And that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Well, is it about kind of a building a personal brand, and then these guys have built it to a degree that they can go off on their own, and they are the Walt Mossberg, David Pogue kind of brands. And
yeah, they don't need the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal anymore. Right. They don't need they have absolutely no need for their parent media organizations anymore. They could just go off and do it on their own, and you know, take all of their followers with them. Absolutely.
Well, getting us back to Apple, one last thing, and maybe waking Phil up is what do we think about
still here, of course,
this iPad Mini with the Retina, which was maybe the only thing that was somewhat surprising, although expected. Some people thought that they couldn't pull it off for a number of reasons this time around, but they did. And so how many do you have, Steve? Did you buy two or?
Well, they're not out yet till the end of November. The iPad Air will come out around November 1st, or maybe it is exactly November 1st.
That's what
And then the iPad Mini toward the end of November. And I'm absolutely going to buy an iPad Mini Retina. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it's not that I don't love my full-size iPad, because I do, but the form factor of the smaller size is absolutely perfect for what I use it for.
Well, don't you have to see what the iPad Air looks like? Because it looks
exactly. That's another fairly small.
So it might not actually be okay. You know,
because
my problem
doesn't fit into the big pocket.
So. My problem with the full size iPad, it's been the weight's too heavy to like do reading and other things for an extended period of time. Where the Mini or the Nexus 7 kind of form factor is light enough that you can hold it for a long time.
Yeah.
So that's why I like that smaller form factor. Plus, you can put it in a pocket if you need to.
I haven't seen hardware yet, obviously, but my whole position before these announcements was that the full-size iPad is too big, heavy, and clunky to carry around. It's just too big, and the iPad Mini is great, but it's not Retina, and so I was stuck between a rock and a hard place. Apple has completely, entirely rewritten the whole equation, because it has satisfied my need for a Retina iPad Mini, which I think is great for mobile productivity, as I mentioned earlier, with a standalone keyboard. But it has also made its full-size iPad so much thinner and so much lighter that I'm ending up in a position where I don't know which of the two I would prefer to take on the road, because the iPad Mini has increased portability, granted, but the iPad Air suddenly is thin and light enough to be a tempting mobile proposition given its larger screen real estate. So it's suddenly become a much more difficult decision than it was in the past.
Well, you know what I found about the new 13-inch MacBook Pro is it's so close in weight and size and everything else to the MacBook Air that, I mean, I set them side by side at the Apple store because I was going back and forth between which one should I get. And, of course, then I looked at the display of the Retina display and said, oh, my God.
Isn't it only like $100 or $200 more to get Retina? It's fairly close.
Yeah, it depends on your configuration, but sometimes the price is almost identical. And so the form factor itself was so close that I thought, oh my God, to get a chip that's faster, to get a Retina display and all of that, it makes no sense for me to go to the Air.
And does the Pro still have an optical drive, or have they dropped that?
No, they dropped it. Yeah, and I never use it anyway. I mean, I've got one on my iMac, my 27-inch iMac, but I use that maybe once a month.
Steve, would the decision be a bit more difficult for you if the Air was Retina?
Yes, it would have been. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's going to be their division, is if, you know, the Air is going to be the regular screen for another couple years, and the Pro will have the Retina screen, and that'll be your point of differentiation aside from the internal switcher. I'd imagine that. Pro graphics are not discrete. They're discrete, right? They're not embedded just like they are.
Well, the 13 inch MacBook Pro has discrete graphics except for the top of the line model, right? Has embedded graphics except for the top of the line model, right?
Has the Intel embedded graphics.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there is one config where it's separate.
The upper one, yeah.
Yeah.
But the I'm actually expecting a FedEx shipment with a 13 inch MacBook Pro, and I'm pretty excited to see it. But it would kind of boil down to the portability. The Air is just so perfect for taking on the road that I'm not really sure I would want to really, you know, permanently go the MacBook Pro route. But you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Phil, you've been kicking around town this week, doing events. But what have you been up to? Oh no, he did. He did fall asleep.
Oh my God! Maybe he's on mute.
Sorry about that. I couldn't unmute for some reason. I had a little coughing attack there, and I couldn't unmute. It was like, oh my God!
I was actually going to pretend that was you. I was going
to
say,
well, this week I've been going to porno shops and.
What is this? Corner shops and comic book stores. That's all there is. MobiU, the Mobile University. There's an organization or a nonprofit organization that was founded in Chicago, the Heartland Mobile Conference. Is that what it is? Yeah. And they put on a small, I guess you call it a conference, on Thursday night over at Best Buy, and mostly Best Buy attendees, but there were some other folks. I mean, probably about 50 folks that showed up, and it was just a short, about a 4 or 5 session event, and I was talking about the mobile path to purchase, talking a lot about using mobile in the retail space and how people use it, and the best part was, and I highlight this in the post on Minute, is I really enjoyed the whole focus group thing. They put together about 6 or 7 people that and some were from Best Buy. So I think that the panel was a little bit more tech savvy than the normal population. But yeah. What was learned was, I really enjoyed it. And I think the biggest insight came from about the 60-year-old woman. So, but it was a good little event. And it was touted as a safe learning environment. So there was, you know, they just went on and on and on about this, you know, the fact that they don't want sponsors to pitch their products and their presentations and things like that, which is all well and good, but it got to sound a little bit pitchy to it. It's like, okay, stop already.
Yeah. But you know what the good thing about this is the assumption always is, you know, that you're 30 something and you know everything about mobile, all the technology, everything that's possible and yada, yada, yada. And we all know that's not the case. And we all know that even those of us who live, eat, breathe, and sleep this stuff, we're always coming across new things or somebody's telling us something that we just couldn't possibly have even seen, let alone know about.
Because we're older, yeah.
Well, no, because you can't see everything. It's impossible.
Oh, you see everything, Steve.
No. I'm not like Julio. I mean, he's just all over this stuff like a bad suit. So, yeah.
So it was a good event. And you know, we'll see how it plays out. There's just, you know, one more mobile resource for you. So,
yeah.
And then also this week, HyperIQ, we supported a little thing here at Lakeville South High School. They're one of their STEM classes was a tech class that was dealing with hardware, and they're doing some Arduino work, and then they're moving into Raspberry Pi shortly as well. So, and I had a chance to go visit them, and you can see the photos of that at HyperIQ's Facebook page. But
that's pretty cool.
So, what kind of
applications
are they using those? Well,
they basically got a starter, an Arduino starter kit, and the Arduino starter kit comes with about 10 projects that you can build. So they're working their way through just the basic, you know, everything from keyboards to lights to, you know, to small motors and things like that. So they're working their way through that book, and then there are some of those students that will go on to try to, you know, create some, you know, hack their own processes. So it's very interesting to see, and you know, I made a point of asking, you know, what drew these kids to this class, and what they really liked, was it the hardware side or the software side? And you know, most of them really enjoyed the software piece, you know, building, you know, coding these devices. So they enjoyed that a great deal. And while I was there, they were able to get a Raspberry Pi up and working. And, you know, there's a fair amount of hacking that goes on, because they have to find ways to work around the school administrative stuff as far as access to their internet.
Oh, so sure. Yeah.
Always constantly running into a battle of, oh, we got to go down and get somebody from support to come in and give up a password to let them in, you know, that sort of a thing. So, and they're using a lot of, they're using Ubuntu and Linux, and they've got a, you know, sort of this graveyard of old Dell machines that they're going to convert to Linux and start booting up. And so it was very interesting to be there.
That's actually pretty cool. Well, so, and you know, that leads right into, the whole discussion about the Internet of Things, because, there are so many people that are doing Arduino based, things. They're creating their own things, or they're mm-hmm. creating their own processes that can then be kicked off by, you know, a SmartThings hub, for example. Mm-hmm. And so knowing how to use or how to hack Arduino, and Tim, you've done a lot of this, so you know some of the tools that are
only
out.
The Raspberry Pi, though. I've not done any Arduino.
Oh, you haven't? Okay. I thought you'd done Arduino.
Is my tool of choice.
Okay.
And Raspberry Pi's got the HDMI outs and things like that. So there's a little bit more. I think there's a little more meat to that. But the Arduino
is more interesting stuff, I think. Yeah, although okay. I still use it just as a server here in the house.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, Catherine Grayson at the Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal did an article about is Minnesota's next big thing the Internet of Things? In fact, I tweeted it through the Minovate account, Twitter account. Right after it came out, I mean, probably 20 minutes after it came out. And I still, even though I think my prediction is too early, still absolutely fundamentally believe that Apple is going to get in this in a huge way, that we're going to see Apple things like crazy by next fall. And just because it just makes so much sense. I mean, you walk in there now, there's Nest thermostats and Philips Hue bulbs and Belkin cameras and all kinds of things that can be controlled through the iPhone or the iPad. This is a really good article by her talking about one particular startup, but then some other companies that are involved, including Digi International, who's right here in Eden Prairie. In fact, my neighbor, a couple blocks away, is the CTO. And they're really exploding into this space. I mean, they already have, actually.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that Steve is wrong in his prediction, that it'll take a little longer than next fall. But I don't think
Apple really will. I mean, they have a kind of a track record of enabling third party developers. You know, with the iPod first, now with the iPhone and iPad. I think they made this stay out of it and just make a good base platform for apps and other things, and people can build around it.
I think there's going to be some investment in it, but I, you know, as far as, you know, Apple getting into it directly, but I just don't think it's going to be as big a market for them as we're letting on. I think the proof of the pudding is that everybody keeps talking about this Apple Watch. I've yet to see anything happen. So it's
look at the fuel band
on steroids.
Okay, but look at the Apple TV as a device. So I've got three of them in the house, and one of them is hooked up to, it's not hooked up. I can connect all of them to various audio things and so on. Now I can screen share with this new MacBook. Do AirPlay with it, and you can see how they're stealthily integrating Apple devices with that protocol, that AirPlay protocol. And it happened with Bonjour, you know, the IETF standard, which became AirPrint, and now you got all these these Bonjour type printers that are out there, so you can print to them wirelessly. And I don't know. I'm going to stand by that prediction.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
Apple. I'm sorry, you're wrong. That's all there is to
it. I mean, Apple just I just think of Apple as the SmartThings hub, and all the satellites are revolving around the smart hub as the devices, the third party people will use to sort of tap into that Apple SmartThings hub. I think that's just, I don't think Apple will go beyond that.
Hmm. Hello. Okay. Yeah. Yep. No, I was thinking my brain was moving there at that point. So
I'm sorry. That was kind of painful, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, Julio, what else, who else is doing stuff? You kind of have your finger on the pulse of what's going on. And, a couple things that I thought was interesting was that article about Dun Brothers joining the mobile app payment trend, but also that you didn't do any stories on the tech of healthcare with Minsure. Now that there's so much brouhaha about the federal health stuff.
Yeah, it's a fair point. We have a health industry writer, and I sort of left that to him. Although there's probably some opportunity there for me. But I thought the Dun Brothers thing was interesting because I've done quite a lot of reporting about sort of mobile payment options, you know, ranging from Google Wallet with NFC to Square to Starbucks teaming up with Square. I've done a ton of writing about that in the past, and the whole Dun Brothers thing I thought was very interesting because it just made sense for Dun Brothers to sort of get into this. But there, and then this is not reflected in my story because that's just a news story, but you know, I'm just stating an opinion here. It struck me as a little weird that they team up with Level Up of all people, because if you go out on the Level Up website, it looks pretty weak. And they have a directory of places that support Level Up. There aren't very many of them in the Twin Cities. And then if you go on each of them, you know, there's supposed to be a description about who this company is, that they have reviews, and there's like zero activity. I've yet to see the Level Up technology in the wild anywhere. And so the partnership they made struck me as a little surprising that they would go that way. But just in general, what they did, you know, totally makes sense, because they were starting to look a little archaic with other, you know, with big coffee shops making big alliances with people like Square, and also, you know, mom and pop coffee shops, you know, creating their own, you know, custom made stands for their iPads with their Square dongles. I mean, this is a big, big trend. And so what they did there, so, you know, makes absolute sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it makes so much sense that we can leverage these devices for payment. So we can walk in and just pay for stuff. Cause it's, you know, the only thing that I haven't seen yet, maybe you guys have seen this or not, I don't know, but the one thing that PayPal introduced, even though they throw up ads to have you buy stuff in advance, they do give you the choice of being able to change your payment method. So I can either have money through PayPal deducted from my checking account, I can use my business credit card, or I can use my personal credit card, and I can make the choice of how I want. Now, it's not seamless and easy, but it's absolutely there. So if I walked into a Dun Brothers and wanted to pay, it would be through my personal card, because that's what's in my iPhone. And what if I'm in buying a box of donuts or something, and I want to put it on a business credit card?
Yeah, that's a good point. And Google Wallet has done something similar. I've been in a couple of payment situations where I had to, like for instance, I went on a trip to Madison and I made an Airbnb reservation, and I was about to pay for it. And I can't remember how I became aware of this, but I was told, okay, you can pay with your credit card, but if you want to knock, you know, 25% off the price, pay with Google Wallet. My eyes went wide, but then it was slightly clunky, because then I had to stop what I was doing on my computer and go over to an Android device and fire up the Airbnb app and then, you know, find the listing that I was about to pay for.
Oh, geez.
And pay for it that way. So it's a little clunky. The whole, you know, walking into stores with your phone and there's a little NFC terminal you have to tap your phone against. It's very sci-fi. It's very cool, but it's still at the point, you know, where most people aren't even, don't even know what that's about. And even the people at the stores very often don't know that they have NFC terminals in their own stores. So if you ask them questions about it, they don't know what the hell you're talking about. So there have been a lot of interesting experiments that are still in the very bleeding edge sci-fi kind of area. And none of this has coalesced in a way that makes a lot of sense. Apple has so far failed. It's wallet, the wallet thing that it has in iOS hasn't really taken off. I personally never use it.
Well, don't you think that the iBeacons technology that PayPal is using in their new Bluetooth LE implementation for small businesses, don't you think that has a chance of taking off?
Yes, absolutely. And they're using that technology at ballparks. I think AT&T Field or whatever has enabled this technology. I believe Major League Baseball is in the process of rolling it out to all its stadiums. So Target Field, very likely will get it. Yeah. So there are definite possibilities there. But you keep seeing people try this, try that, over and over. None of it really seems to take. And so you sort of get back to the fundamental question: What the hell is so hard about pulling out your wallet and, handing over a credit card anyway?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, the other thing that I find interesting is, because now Target's got that new app, and if you get onto their free Wi-Fi in the store, then they're going to be able to track you and offer you things and all of that. And it was really fascinating because I had a discussion with my wife about our brother-in-law, who we dub Full Price Dave, because he never buys anything at a discount. And so his wife is always, my sister-in-law Liz is always after him to use coupons or discounts or whatever. And my wife is like the maven of coupons. She always is like, no, don't buy it yet. Go through Ebates because we get another 2%. It's like, oh my God. Anyway, and so the whole variable pricing thing is something that the airlines do really well, where if you come in and there's a cookie set on your machine and they know what your payment history is and the kinds of tickets you buy and all of that, the price is different sometimes than if you come in on a fresh browser, for example. And I found the same thing through Tor when I've got a anonymous IP address, that sometimes Amazon will show me different things based on whether or not cookies are set on my browser. And so isn't this going to really up the ability for retailers to do variable pricing based on whether you're a good customer or not, or whether you're a full price customer, or you buy with a coupon?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned variable pricing, because they did a story about a company that brings parking ramps sort of into the cloud, because they set up a QR, people download their apps and put their credit card information in, and then when they pull into a parking ramp that is part of this network, there's a QR code. You scan the QR code and you get in. You just drive right in, because there's a little piece of equipment connected, to the ramp arm that registers that you scan the QR code and just lets you in. And then sort of to keep track of how much time you spend in the ramp, then when you exit the ramp, you scan your QR code again, and then your payment is appropriately registered. And that's very interesting. But I was talking to the CEO, and he was saying that they're only scratching the surface here, because eventually, with enough ramps getting on this thing and enough people using it, you can start sort of get into a situation, a variable pricing situation, where the price of your parking can vary depending on the time of day, depending on the event, depending on where in the ramp you park, how close to the door you are, whether there's valet parking or not. You get into a situation, very, very hotel or airline kind of a situation, where you, there's automatic couponing and discounts that you can take advantage of. And the whole situation gets very interesting because, you know, suddenly this can get into a situation where, was it your wife, Steve, with the coupons?
Yeah.
Where your wife can sort of latch onto this and sort of, you know, start, her brain can start turning about, you know, where we can park for the best deal at what time, you know, how we can park, you know. She can sort of figure out, you know, okay, we have to park, but let's park in a particular way with a particular routine that'll cost us less money. That has never happened in parking ramps. And, you know, if that takes off, that'll be very interesting.
Huh.
I can't remember the name of the company, but I wrote a story about it. It's on TwinCities.com.
Yeah, I can remember that. Yeah. Well, because you did it on a ramp I used to park in downtown St. Paul.
Victory Ramp.
Victory Ramp, yeah. Interesting.
And I talked to the Victory Ramp people. You know, when I talked to the owners of a downtown St. Paul parking ramp, you know, I half expect, you know, to be talking to these guys that, you know, talk like they have the Bears accent, like in Chicago.
Right.
And I was talking to these guys, and they're mini visionaries. You know, they're seeing the possibilities, and I thought that was kind of interesting.
And by the way, that's sort of judgmental of you, Julio.
Yeah. No, but I get into stereotypical situations where I run it. I arrive at a particular scenario expecting people to be a particular way. And when they're not, I'm very pleasantly surprised.
So. Yeah. That's how I felt about Phil the first time I met him.
Yeah. Love-hate relationship that we have. Yeah. So tell me, as we kind of wrap up, so all of the new products, and I know, Steve, you've already purchased. But you've already jumped on the new MacBook Pro 13-inch. Why did you choose the 13 over the 15, by the way?
Just because I didn't want to carry something bigger.
Okay.
That this was a perfect upgrade. Because the 11-inch, the screen real estate is just not enough. It's not tall enough to be able to do things.
What if they made an 11-inch Retina? Would that make it
No.
Better? Need more room.
No, yeah. I just need more height. So when I'm doing, when I'm using InDesign, for example, to do something or doing anything in WordPress, even for web development or anything, I just need more screen real estate.
Yeah, the 11 inch is more aggressively rectangular.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. I want to before I forget, I just want to note one thing that we didn't talk about. They upgraded the iLife apps as well, and the iPhoto is not very different. GarageBand, I frankly never use. I'm just not that kind of user. But I live in iMovie. You know, now that I'm editing more and more video for the Pioneer Press, I live in iMovie. And iMovie, I know iMovie. I knew the iMovie very well. I knew how to use it, but I always thought it was a deeply weird program. I mean, just the way it's designed, and its look and feel was starting to age. I like the updated iMovie. I like a lot, and I ran into the same situations that iWork users are going through, where they're looking for the features that they know and like, and don't find them, and they start freaking out. And I had my minor freaking out moments with iMovie, but inevitably, I always found a slightly different way to do things that I had done in the past. And sort of bottom line, the new iMovie. Apple's iMovie is just fantastic. I just absolutely love it. I think it's
I'll
great.
Have to boot it up. I haven't even booted it up because I use Final. Yeah. I use Final Cut, so I
yeah, sure. I no, but Final Cut is just too much for me. I just don't need that
right,
much power.
Right.
But the iMovie, they've rearranged the controls so they're easier to find. They've actually removed controls that existed in the past. Using the logic that they're not necessary because you can sort of do things, you know, instead of having a button, you can just sort of point at a timeline and do the same function there. So that's where I had my little freak out moments because buttons were gone. But everything is, it's a brilliantly, brilliantly redesigned program with a very nice new look and feel. And I'm just having a blast with it.
Nice. I'll have to check it out for sure.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, good. Hey, any new events coming up that we need to pay special attention to? MobCon, obviously, on November 7th.
Yeah, a week after next.
Yep. And we talked about City Camp last time.
Right. It's startup weekend this weekend.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Started yesterday.
Yep. And we don't have anything in here about Halloween and trick-or-treating.
That's coming up, what, was it Thursday or Wednesday? It's Thursday, right?
It is. Yeah. Thursday. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we don't get a blizzard.
Oh God.
That could happen. You never know.
Yes.
All I remember is that when, we had that Halloween blizzard, my daughter was like 4 years, 3 years. No, God, she was 3 years old. And she went out trick or treating with a big down jacket on, and she wanted to go as Batman. And so she looked like Batman on steroids, like this little Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, under this costume.
Batman transforming into the Hulk, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
The Michelin Man, one of the two.
Yeah.
Yeah. When trick-or-treaters come up to my door, I have a requirement that they have to have an NFC compatible phone and they have to tap. If they don't.
There
do
you
that,
go.
No candy. Sorry.
No, yeah. Yeah. Well, what if some kid has a laptop and or an iPad and shows you a presentation about tricks?
Well, maybe.
Would that
maybe.
Suffice? Okay. All right. Just checking. Okay. All right.
What about treats?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in charge of the treats this year for the first time ever. I've never done the treat routine myself, but it just happens my son has a violin lesson that my wife takes him to. So.
Uh-oh. Pencil erasers at Julio's.
Oh boy.
So this could be a fiasco. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Just hand out the Snickers and Reese's.
Yeah. There you go. The problem is I'll probably.
I think we talked about this last year, but you know, when I lived in Des Moines has a tradition where kids have to tell a joke to get a treat. So we always had a great time telling a lot of jokes.
Oh, fun!
That I'm very so.
Huh? We should do limericks. Well, there once was a man from Nantucket.
You have to do a filthy limerick before you.
That's right. Before you get any candy.
Before you get.
Oh,
a treat.
Oh God. All right. Well, hey, everyone, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on
the Minute 8 Gang Podcast.
Take care.
Have a good week.
Smile for a while. Woman, dancer.